Good evening. I call to order the Monroe Public Schools Board of Education work session. Today is April 23rd, 2024. The time is 5:30. Could we have roll call, please, Jamie?
Yes, Dr. Behrens.
Here.
Mr. Heck.
Here.
Mrs. Myers.
Here.
Mr. Van Wassenova.
Here.
Mrs. Vincent.
Here.
Mrs. Williams.
Here.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Here. And could we stand for the pledge, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
That brings us to discussionary items. Superintendent Shaw.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, sir, so much tonight, sir. So we are pleased to have Monroe Community Mental Health Authority with us tonight, Lisa Graham, the CEO. And so she's going to be sharing all that is happening with the community mental health. So if you want to come on up, and
thank you.
I think you're mic'd up right there so we can hear it all.
Yeah, okay. Is this good?
Just touch the button. There
you go. All right.
There
great.
We go.
Okay, let me get the... Well, thank you for having me. My name is Lisa Graham, and I am the Executive Director for Monroe Community Mental Health Authority, and I've been trying to go around to boards around the county, fire, police, fire, public, first responders, and public schools to talk about some of the changes that have happened at Monroe Community Mental Health Authority since last October, and how those, I think, will be of interest to all of you here and to all of the teachers and students across the county. So most of you might be familiar with Monroe Community Mental Health Authority. We have been around for a long, long time. We've always been the safety net provider for behavioral health services. And prior to October of last year, we had pretty strict criteria for who we could serve. And we were funded to serve moderate to severely mentally impaired people, either mental illness or developmental disabilities, kids, youth with serious emotional disturbances, and they had to have Medicaid. And so I know a lot of times people would come to mental health and they might say, oh, I went and mental health couldn't do anything for me, or they said I didn't meet criteria, things like that. Last spring, we applied with the state of Michigan to get something called a CCBHC certification. I've had to get really good at those letters, and my board still, I like to hear them try to say it too. CCBHC stands for Certified Community Behavioral Health Clinic. And what that has done for us and then for the whole county is it says that we are now funded. We can serve any person with a mental illness, no matter the severity of the illness, anything from mild all the way up to severe. And it doesn't matter what insurance you have. It doesn't matter if you don't have insurance, if you can't pay, we can serve anyone with a mental illness. So that's great news. We don't have to turn anyone away. The CCBHC does not cover individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities, but we've always been able to serve that group of people with our normal capitation from the state of Michigan and through our contracts. So really this has opened up what we can do and how we can serve the community. One of the coolest things that it's allowed us to do is to initiate a 24/7, 365-day-a-year crisis mobile unit. So we can be deployed out into the community anywhere in Monroe County for anyone who's having a mental health emergency. We go as a co-responder with law enforcement, and I've been making my rounds. I'm calling it my CCBHC tour. I'm going around to tell all of the first responders about this so that we can arrive on the scene and be a support. We don't want to come and take over, and we're certainly not first responders. We have one unit and two people staffing it for the entire county. So we are not a first responder unit, but we can certainly support first responders. And we have been doing that, and it's been going really well. But our numbers are still low. And I know that there's more a greater need out in the community than what we're getting. So that's why I'm trying to get the word out to everyone that this service does exist in the county. Again, it's available anytime, night or day. Anyone can call, we will take the call. It'll be answered. It'll be triaged by a mental health professional. And then if we think it's something that is an emergency and that we can help on the scene, then we can be dispatched out, deployed out to that scene. So I wanted to just tell you a little bit about some of that. You have a PowerPoint in front of you, I think, and some of this I covered. So on the second page there, like I said, more than 50 years, we've been the safety net for behavioral health services. And we provide outpatient treatment, and that's the key, outpatient treatment to individuals of all ages. I think our youngest person that we serve is probably 2 or 3 years old. Actually, we might serve, you could even say younger, because we have an infant mental health program. We work with expecting moms who, because of their mental illness, might be at risk for having attachment or bonding issues with their children. So we work with those families prior to the child even being born. But all the way up to, I think, probably in their 90s. And so this is anybody who has a mental illness, an intellectual or a developmental disability, and anyone with a substance use disorder. Monroe County, CMH, we are also the screening and referral unit. Anyone who anyone who has Medicaid or is not insured and they need substance use disorder treatment, they would call us and we would do the initial screening and we would do the initial authorization for services in Monroe County. We don't hold the contracts for the substance use providers in the county. That happens a level up above us. It's something called the regional entity. That's a lot of, we don't need to get into that. But anyway, we don't hold those contracts, but we are the screening and referral. So we're the first step. And we have tight timelines about how quickly we have to turn around those phone calls and get people linked up to services. As I said, we provide crisis services 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And in fiscal year 23, we served approximately 3,000 people. Our mission is to enrich lives and promote wellness. It's a pretty short and sweet, but I think it really covers what we're trying to do. But the vision statement I really love, because that's what we spend a lot of time talking about, is we want to be a valued and active partner in an integrated system of care that improves the health and wellness of our community. We know we cannot solve these problems alone. It really does take everybody in the community working together and coordinating together to impact the health and wellness of our community overall. But we want to be a very important and valuable piece of that, and we partner with so many agencies across the county. This service array page that you have, I think it's page 4 of your slides. I won't go into all of these, but this is just a high-level overview of the number of services and supports that we can provide, everything from psychiatric care to nursing. We have a clubhouse that is a psychosocial rehabilitation program where people with severe mental illness can have a structured work order day and an opportunity to go to work in the community. We have skill building programs. Anyone who has a developmental disability or even a mental illness and they need assistance living independently in their homes, we have services for that. We have group homes across the county, and we also contract with group homes across the entire state. We have assertive community treatment. I don't know if you're aware of that service, but that is something that allows people who are the most severely and persistently mentally ill, who maybe have spent years and years in either in jail or in prison or in state hospitals or homeless maybe. We work with them anytime, anywhere from once a week to once a day to a couple times a day to give them the supports that they need so that they can stay in the community safely and independently as possible. So this is kind of just, like I said, a high-level overview of the various services that we provide, but you can see here there are so many different services that we do offer the community, and we're so excited now that we can say yes to so many more people who come through our door. I talked about the CCVHC, which is really, it was a very rigorous application process. I think, gosh, it was like 50-some pages of questions, and you had to show a policy for everything that you said you did. And it really does transform our mental health service delivery, though, in this county, and we're really excited to be able to offer this. We do not want to say no to people. We want to say yes to anybody who comes through our door. So our crisis services, we've always been available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. We've always had someone answering the phone. And they can do triage. And then the other thing you might not know is that if someone shows up at the hospital and they're saying that they are thinking about hurting themselves or someone else, or they're in a psychiatric emergency, if they have Medicaid or if they are uninsured, We get the call. Even if they're not open and receiving services to us, we're the ones who get the call. We go to the hospital or we make contact with the person at the hospital, and we do the screening and the assessment to determine whether or not that person meets criteria to be hospitalized, have an inpatient hospitalization. So that's always been part of what we do. And we have, by the way, we have a state requirement to arrive and to do the assessment and make the determination within 3 hours. And we are consistently 100% at that. So it is a quick response from us. But now we've been able to add the crisis mobile vehicle. This is just a plain vehicle. We don't have big signs on it. We don't want to pull up in your driveway at 3 a.m. with lights and sirens and big signs. And it's just our staff in plain clothes just coming in to talk. Sometimes, and those are if we get the call without law enforcement or fire call for request or for support. But if it's just us, that's what we do. Even if we do get a call for support, we arrive, we kind of hang back, we let the first responders tell us what they need, and then we'll go in. And oftentimes it's great because they can hand off to us, and then they can go and get back on to the business of whatever they need to be doing, and we can sit with that person for as long as it takes. And right now, our mobile crisis, we're averaging about a 20-minute response time, and we're going everywhere. We keep a lot of data on where we're going, and we're all over the county, surprisingly. We are concentrated in the 481-6162 area codes, but we're hitting all of the various area codes in the county. 20-minute response time, and the average time we're spending on the scene with someone is about an hour and 20 minutes. So the other cool thing about that is once we do a response, we follow up. We follow up within 24, 48 hours, and then we follow up a week later, and then we follow up again within 30 days. We stay with the person until we're satisfied that crisis has been resolved. So I think this is a service that would be really helpful to a lot of students and families that that you all are concerned about as well. And so I just wanted to make sure that you guys had the information. You can access care with us through a scheduled appointment. You can call and schedule your appointment. People can walk in. We have a location. Our primary location is on Raisinville Road, right next to the fairgrounds. But we also have a location that we opened last year in downtown Monroe. I never know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, but I call it the Benish Building. You guys might pronounce it differently. I've heard it a couple different ways. But right there on Monroe, and I think Monroe and 5th, we have a clinic there. And then we also have certified peer supports who are at the Opportunity Center a few days a week, I think 3 days a week. And that's just a walk-in or scheduled. The other great thing is that when people call us, we will ask, would you like to come here? Would you like us to come to you? Would you like to do a virtual appointment? So we're trying to reduce barriers to care as much as possible. We have a fleet of vehicles, so we can go out and pick the person up and take them to their appointment if they need that. Or we can come and meet them in the community. We can go to their home. Whatever is most comfortable and whatever allows the person to feel best about accessing our services. There's a lot I could talk about. You know, it's what I do all day. But I wanted to keep this high level for you guys just so that you know that we're here, that our rules have changed. We can serve way more people now. We have a number of other resources that are available, and really excited to continue to work with everybody in the community. And if you guys have any other groups that you're like, hey, you should come and talk to this group or an individual school or anything like that, I'd be really happy to come out and talk. I did bring some pamphlets as well about kind of who we are, how to get help in an emergency, what to do if someone you love needs help but won't get help, what are your options? And I think there's something in there about guardianships, conservatorships, power of attorney, things like that as well. So we're trying to produce a lot more literature for the community as well to really help inform people. There are so many resources, and we realize a lot of people just don't know what exists out there, so we're working really hard to try to get the message out.
So, great presentation. What could you use from the school? What assistance here? I know you've scaled up through the grant considerably. Yeah. What you can offer. So, what would be beneficial when you've been presenting to schools at your ask of the school districts at this time?
You know, that's I wasn't prepared to say what can we do for you. I was here to say what we could do for the schools, but really just letting people know, letting families know, connecting with us. If you have, I know there you have all kinds of rules that I'm not aware of, and every time I go present at a different place, they're like, oh yeah, but we have this and this, and we all have those kinds of challenges that can get in the way, but any way that we can just partner to help make families and students aware that these services exist, that we can help, we're here to help, and if we can, whatever we can do, and I know that you all, like I said, you all have different rules about how you can refer and how that works, but I'd be interested in just continuing a conversation maybe in a different place just to say, let me help better understand your world and see how we can partner to get people help. I know that especially our youth are really struggling and really hurting, and teachers are struggling mm-hmm. because there's so much going on in the classroom besides education, and so whatever we can do within our scope, we'd like to be able to do that. We do presentations, we do to teachers, to faculty, to students. We've done a lot with different schools in the area already.
Excuse me, great presentation. Would it be an avenue for you to work with like the social work team? I'm not sure what you call it, what's the team called, the behavioral team, in some way to kind of link up with them? I don't know if that sounds like an avenue that would be possibility, so that they know they have direct access to you all in some capacity mm-hmm. in some way. Might be just a lifeline there.
Exactly. I think just the relationships and the partnerships are very important, just that they know they have someone they can call and even bounce ideas off of, and do we know of a resource that they don't know about? Can we offer some kind of support, or do we know who can? I think that's the more that we do that, the healthier our community becomes.
Families and students, and
that would help make everyone here knowledgeable about those resources because they're incredible.
Yeah, I could send them electronically, and then you can distribute them, you know, as you want to in your schools.
So one of the questions I've been thinking about is your crisis mobile vehicle, and so I get how it could work inside the county. But have you thought much about how, like an example that we could use as a school and how it could actually help us, like in a situation we might be in that we would want to go, okay, hey, here's what we need to call because I know we can get support. For example, if nothing's going on, that moment in time within potentially 20 minutes.
Yes. I'm sorry, is your question, can you access that?
Yeah, or do you have an example like of a, as you brought that on, how that could be used like in a school setting?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I think if you're having, I have to be careful because otherwise I'll get calls 24/7, right? And we are just one vehicle. Right. But I do think, I would love to sit down and have that conversation. I mean, okay. I learn so much when I go and do these presentations about what each group faces in their day-to-day, and so then when we're kind of talking it out, then we can brainstorm and go, oh, you know what, that's an area where we could help, or that's an area. So, there are some times when people definitely need to go to the emergency room. That's just the most appropriate place for them. And then there are other times when maybe we can intervene and we can prevent them from having to go to the ER. Maybe we can work with the family. Maybe we can work with, depending on the age of the child. You know, there are all kinds of limitations depending on age. But I would be very open and welcome to some kind of other kind of sit down where we could brainstorm how can we be as helpful as possible to your schools.
I can think of situations recently where maybe a phone call to a third-party intervention could have de-escalated or maybe changed the outcome of circumstances. So.
And sometimes, our experience is sometimes when a person in a uniform arrives on scene, it can be a help sometimes it can escalate. And so we are there just to, again, support. Sometimes we can, when they see somebody who's not in a uniform, then they might calm down a little bit, and we can kind of jump in and start to engage with that person. But I'm sure there are lots of ways we could be helpful to the schools, and we would love to do that.
Now, we'll organize a meeting with, I'm thinking right now off the top of my head, and there'll be others there from our social work to our medical teams, principals. I think there's an opportunity for us to really look at what are different scenarios, and then should we call or not. There's a couple of scenarios I've thought about where it would be where we've been sitting down with a parent, and that the call would be, based on what I see here, ideal to you. So
yeah. Yep. We also have a program we started. Actually, Sheriff Goodenough, I have to give him the credit. He started this a number of years ago, but we've built on it, and we just have called it a universal referral form. So what Sheriff Goodenough found when he was when his team would respond to various calls, sometimes there would be not enough for, there was nothing that they needed to do as far as taking the person to jail or taking them into custody. They didn't really need to take them to the hospital, but they knew there was something going on, and they would get called over and over and over, but there would be very little they could do. Sometimes they would take them to the hospital, but they would typically be discharged and back home within a couple hours, and it became this cycle. And it did take up a lot of resources, necessary resources. And so he started this this form that he asked his people to, his deputies to fill out if they would go on a scene and see someone that they thought, there's just something going on here. I think there's some need for mental health intervention. So they would fill that form out, send it to us, and our team would do an outreach to that person within 24 hours. And that's been really, really successful. We have done literally hundreds, if not thousands, of those since Sheriff Goodenough started that program years ago. And now we have about a dozen community agencies who are using that form as well. And so it really, these are people who might not walk into our building or call us, that we're able to just do an outreach and say, we start with a peer support specialist, who is a person who has lived experience. They're not necessarily a degreed person, but someone who's been there, who's had that journey, and we start with that, just doing an outreach engagement. Hey, I heard that you had an incident. Is there anything we can help you with? Would you like to talk? And so that's been really, really successful. So that's another piece that we could talk about, again, making sure that everybody's following their own rules of confidentiality and HIPAA and things like that.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Any other questions, everybody?
Thank you so much for coming. And I think when, in the next steps, when you're able to meet with specific groups within Monroe Public Schools, I think it's so important that we understand that what community mental health was able to do before is very different than what you all can do now.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that when I was still in the classroom, that even though it would have been right at the very beginning of your new designation, we didn't have that information, so we just assumed it was the status quo.
Right.
So I feel that it's going to be so impactful for teachers, for parapros, for everybody that's working with our students, to know that there's this plethora of services that if you can't provide it, you're the conduit to getting us the services that our students need.
Correct. Yeah, that's what we want to be. We may not be the provider ultimately, but we can help get the person where they need to be and to get the most appropriate level of care. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's important that you communicate maybe your faster response time, the resources you have to get people in and screened quicker, because frankly, a little bit on what Mary said, the reputation of the mental health mm-hmm. department in the past has not been very good,
right?
Particularly on turnaround and getting people in. So with things that have improved, any kind of communication, that would certainly help.
Yeah. That's what I hope we can get that message out. And I hope that's what people experience when they come in our doors, too. And I can't say enough, too, if when you talk to people, if they have a problem, if they say, well, I went to mental health and this is what happened, really, honestly, please do encourage, we have entire departments dedicated to customer service and recipient rights. And so when things don't go well, we want to know so that we can fix them. And so I really, when people say, oh, it won't do any good to call, please do call our customer services line or call and ask for customer services if you had, less than good experience, because we want to make those improvements and we're really dedicated to being able to help the community.
Lisa, I'll just briefly testify on behalf of Monroe Community Mental Health Authority. The college obviously just has an incredible relationship with you guys, and I can straight out say that you save students. If their mental health isn't where it needs to be, then they can't succeed in school, and we see so much of that in the cases that we see in front of this board. So thanks for all you do in the community.
Yeah, thank you so much. We love working with the college, and proud MCCC alumni myself. So
I just want to point out Lisa Graham has also taken those phone calls and looked into them personally when things are done. So it's not just her team, it's Lisa as well that does that. So it starts at the top and it shows.
Thank you. It doesn't always, I know it's when you're working with government systems or pseudo government systems and bureaucracy, it can be really frustrating. And I promise you, we are always trying to do our best and really eager to make things right when they haven't gone right. So, I really encourage people to come out and see us, give us a call, give us a try. I think you'll be happy.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Lisa, for coming tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. Enjoy the rest of your meeting.
You too. So, Tom and Leah, I'm going to let you guys get started. I'm going to step out for one quick second. So, Trojan Build 5. Tom, Leah, it's your show. Lisa, can you wait 1 second?
We don't have a fancy PowerPoint for you because we want the house to be a surprise when you come to the open house.
I want it too.
So you're going to have to wait till the open house, or I'm sure if you would like a sneak peek, Tom would maybe accommodate that.
Yep. Anytime.
When he's there during the day, but we want it to be in person. Pictures don't do it justice.
Yeah. Yep. We're wrapping up Trojan Build 5. It's kind of crazy to say Trojan Build 5. But kids have been working really hard this year. It's been nice to go back to a ranch. The neighbors are eagerly walking by now that the weather's starting to turn, and we're starting to see in the pattern where people are getting the itch. They kind of know that the house is wrapping up. We're putting on the last bit of the siding here and there, and they see the kids back outside working. We were working just recently, putting in the yard. We'll be starting to plant grass seed and stuff like that. We were ahead of schedule. We're still kind of ahead of schedule, but with any house, whether students are building it or a contractor's building it for a custom for a couple or anything like that, you get to the end where it's a big shuffling of the pieces on the game board with all of the other subcontractors to come in and finish up their work, you know. So it's nice to see, you know, be there with the students so they can see everybody kind of come in and doing their final stuff. And so the house has got a lot of really cool features, very different from any of the other ones, which is one thing that I like to do each year, is each house be completely unique and different. So it's nice to get onto another street and been welcomed by all the other neighbors like usual. Great neighborhood to be in. Nene Riggs, our realtor, has been in with us about 2 weeks ago. She walked the house with me, was giving me some pointers of what she's seeing, people are really liking in houses, what people are oohing and ahhing when they're looking in homes and stuff like that. With a spec home, you try to reach as many of the people's attention and their likes and try to stay away from the dislikes. But so we met with her. I feel like we're pretty on track with that. And then just recently had John Taft in, and he was doing all his work. He's got all his information to start his appraisal process. Things are looking good with the market right now. Both him and Nini both said that things seem to be trending like they're about the same as what they were last year. We are hearing whispers, but gosh, you never know. But they are talking about interest rates coming down, which would only improve the housing market. So we're eager to get this one done. Hope to see you guys at the ribbon cutting ceremony. You know, just like every house, it's just such a long race to get to the end that for me, it's one of the most satisfying things. And I'm sure with Leah as well, she knows all these kids, even though she's not their instructor, she knows them and they know her, you know, and
I don't know what they think someday.
She's a good leader where it's just nice to see the kids at the end show their parents and their grandparents and their, you know, the people that they've brought, you know, they are really proud, you know, of what they've done. And I think it's starting to set in as they're walking up a brand new driveway to think, gosh, we built this house. You know, the first week of school, there was just a foundation here, you know, and some of these kids, you know, the most that they've ever built was a shed or something in Mr. Marchese's fundamentals class. And so it's really rewarding for me. And that's the gas that I get in my tank by seeing all of the kids succeed and being proud of what they've done this year.
They've done beautiful work. I've seen it at lots of different stages at this point, and I always get excited when the finish work starts happening because that's when it gets fun to watch. But the hard work comes before that, and I know that. You know, when they're out there, when there's no roof on it, and they're in the snow, and the kids are complaining that it's cold. I don't know if you know the structure of his day, but he has three groups of advanced students that bus over throughout the day, right? So one group buses over for two class periods and back, and then that happens three times. So he's working with essentially three full 15 student crews that have to come in and figure out where the last one left out, and he has to guide them what to do next. It's a huge undertaking, and it's fun to watch them work, but the finished stuff is the fun things to watch it come together.
Yeah.
But he's ahead of schedule. We talked to Nini about, I don't know if what we're still working on, if we're going to list it before the open house or after the open house, what we decided to do with that. We were kicked around kind of two different ideas, and it was going to depend on where they're at the week before the open house. I think that decision will come when it gets a little bit closer, right? But the open house will be the week after graduation. We're still working out the details on that. So I'll let Jamie pass that information along to you as soon as we get the date nailed down for sure. We're toggling between that Wednesday and that Thursday, and I don't know where we landed. So that'll be happening. You're all welcome and encouraged to come. If you can't stay for the whole thing, at least come and walk through. And the best part about the open house is watching the students walk their families through and tell them exactly which parts of the house that they worked on. Mm-hmm. It's so fun. It's a lot of fun. It's one of our points of pride, definitely, in our career and technical education program. And Tom, he does two roles. He's a teacher, but he's a general contractor. So take any other general contractor that has to work with all those different crews day in and day out. Imagine the challenges of that. And it's been a 1-year turnaround. So next year might be, we're talking about doing things just a little teeny bit different with Trojan Build 6.
Yep.
Can't say that. With Trojan Build 6, because we're hoping to be able to get the plans from the CTE building back from the state and incorporate the advanced students in doing work on both builds next year. So we'll see how we need to modify that, but we've been kind of kicking around some ideas there.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, we're really excited about all of it.
I have talked to my classes about that, and they do seem eager and kind of excited to be able to work on two projects, knowing that the CTE storage building is not something like a house where it's not going to be furnished inside and, you know, it's going to be completely unfinished on the inside. But just to have the opportunity to get just a break from a house and build something different is completely unique. And whether the kids say they like it or not, they love unique
they
stuff.
You know? They do. What questions do you have for us?
Great work, as you guys always do.
Thank you.
Looking forward to the open house.
Yeah. Thank you.
Tom?
How many more lots do you have in that area?
There'll be three more. Yep.
Tom, a little bird told me you are up for an award from the Home Builders Association for these builds.
Don't tell Tom. Mr. Heck, I have no idea about
that. You have some behind-the-scenes information that we don't, so. Yeah.
No, I really don't know anything about that.
Spoiler alert.
Maybe I spoiled it.
About two steps.
The person who told me didn't say it was a secret, so.
All right.
He'll be coming to you soon with the plans for Trojan Build 6 and looking for approval for that. And another, that usually happens in June because then he has to get basements scheduled to get dug in early August.
Try to get that stuff to you guys before summer because let's just leave and that way we know everything's kind of already set in place and, you know. But
that and summer goes that fast.
Quick,
it does. And so I appreciate what Tom and Lee were sharing because when we think about the house and we think about the storage building and juggling all that and then plus out at the high school this summer and that whole exact area is where we're going to have cranes and we're going to have a lot of operations. So there's a lot of logistical challenges we're facing. But the idea, though, is challenging the kids. I was able to stop out a couple different times and watch the build come along and, you know, and it's fun because what I watched in one moment was Tom had given three boys some instruction. You know, one that was more of a leader, and it was just fun watching that one kid, a young man, tell these other two what to do and kind of guiding them along because he understood what the problem was and missing some studs at the airbase and with a nail gun.
Lots of safety checks throughout the build.
And that's exactly it. And that's what's really really cool is that these kids are seeing all that. So if a mistake's made, they're fixing it. And, and that's what it's all about, too, is the educational experience. And now, and I think back to, you know, you talk about some of the kids that were in the program and that they started out, you know, in their first year. But let's start a step before that. How many of the kids walking into Marchese's room and then coming forward had never even knew what a hammer looked like or a belt or when you say, you know, stud or rafter? I mean, so it's a testament to that work right there, and again, another beautiful house. So looking forward to bring that to your completion, bringing forward more information as it comes available. Again, wrapping up there, and then like we shared last spring, we have three more lots. We know that for the 24-25 will be that build, and then after we get done with that unit house build 6, and then we begin to start talking about, you know, okay, we have 7 and 8 left there, but then we'll start talking about that next location after 8. So we have to stay, you know, 2 or 3 years ahead of where we're, so we know where we're going, what we're doing there. So kudos.
And I didn't tell Tom this yet, but we had the ISD put on the Countywide Career Expo today at the Expo Center, and I never can get Justin's last name right, but Justin McMahon.
I just call him Justin.
Justin McMahon from the Carpenters Union.
Plumbers.
Plumbers Union.
Local 671.
McMahonway. Yes. Thank you. I always mess it up. He actually gave the biggest compliment to Tom in the program, and they donate their labor to work as subcontractors on, well, for them it's plumbing. The electricians do the same thing. They come in and they donate their time, and they come in. He said that students that were working with him that day, he said, I had to give them very little direction, and they were just on it, you know, helping whatever I needed. He said he has a well-oiled machine over there, and the students are really a pleasure to work with. So it's encouraging because the trades keep telling us how much they need employees, and that's what CTE is all about, is creating pathways for students for future, right? And when they can see, he essentially becomes the dad, and you know how kids feel about their parents. They don't always like to listen to their parents, and they don't always necessarily by the end of it think that they know everything or that they're always right. But then when those subcontractors come in and they're hearing the same things from them that reinforces it, things start to kind of sink in.
Yeah.
And they get to hear about opportunities, and it's just great all around for everybody.
Yeah. Justin's a former Monroe High grad.
Yeah, he loves to give back.
Younger than me, which I'm starting to see a lot of people are. But he has been an absolute. He has just been a great, great person to team up with. Local 671 has been. I mean, I'm speechless with how great that they've been with us, not only with my program, but even the summer camp. And it's not just the plumbers and pipe fitters. He really is, he's really into education and putting in the groundwork to build these kids up to be in the skilled trades. He's really, he's not just out for, you know, I just want the kids because I need the work. He's interested in the behind the scenes work and working with the kids. And like Leah said, yeah, he's an awesome mentor,
yeah.
Easy to work with, easy to talk with, really bright guy. And I definitely see he's got some moving up in the future. He's a very bright guy, and he's going to be doing some really great things. But yep.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Hope to see you guys at the ribbon cutting.
All right. Well, thank you, too. Have a great night.
You too.
So next on the agenda is fleet management. We're going to not do anything with fleet management tonight. There are some more questions I am gathering answers to on that. So that brings us to the continuum of learning. I'm passing one document out to each of you right here. So a few weeks ago, we had Andrew Schilling, who's the director of, special education director through the ISD for us, and then also Emily Bunden, who is our person here. And what we were trying to share with you is this mentality of how to begin really addressing early on education and in the system we already have in place. And there's what I want to first start out with is these aren't new concepts. This isn't something that's not been done in schools before. It's just moving it down to an earlier age. And that's our goal, is to try and get in earlier and really in the remediation side. And when we start to think about, for example, if you look at that column 3 in the co-taught classroom, we talk about push-in with speech therapy, for example. That's whole class. And what happens in that environment then is the whole class is receiving that service right there. And so we have the potential then to see maybe one or two less students come out of kindergarten into first grade who may need speech services later on. So we know that when we invest earlier in skills that we can have a greater strength right there of not having to either put a label on a student like speech services. And so when we begin to really think about this, it's just starting earlier. And when we look at the layout of your classrooms in the kindergarten world, first grade world, or even third grade, this is what you would have seen, is that you've seen co-taught before, you've seen push-in with special education services before, just like I said, at a higher level. And so when we really look at what we're sharing right here is we're looking at students through the lens of who maybe when we look at you know, your traditional classroom that in kindergarten is what we've seen before. We do have classrooms right now across our district that are in that column too, where you're going to have you know, you take a Custer, for example. Custer might have students with IEPs, and so they're in that column too, one classroom receiving services, and then the other two or three classrooms have no special education students in it. That third column becomes is a classroom of students that may have a greater need. And when I say a greater need, they may have an IEP or not an IEP. Could be a behavioral component to this. There could be other items that come out, but it's not a classroom full of the same type of a child. It's a blended classroom, and it's what we already do. It's just saying that classroom right there, we're going to push more services into it. That final column is really what you have heard over the course of your time as board members and prior board members, and if you had kids going through our district, and there's a local-based classroom. And a local-based classroom is a place where a student would go for specific services. And here, the model is where it's a twofold. And so, for example, I might be a kindergartner. You can pick a grade level. It doesn't matter in the local base world right here, from kindergarten through the sixth grade, we're looking at elementary. And I may have a particular day where things are working very well for me. And so I'm great staying in my general education classroom. There may be another day where it's not.
And I'll give you an example. I was a fourth grade teacher. I had a student that was an EI student. And beginning of the year, this young man could be in my room. We might handle 20 minutes a day. But then as the year progressed, we got to where it might be a full day. But there were moments when I would watch this young man walk into my room and you could see the fire in his eyes. And we would talk, I would look at him, we'd have a quick conversation, and I go, oh man, I'm not sure you're gonna make it today. And so we would get him started out in what would have been the local-based classroom. In that system I was a part of, it would have been what's called an EI classroom, emotional impairment classroom. And so, but that idea is the fluidity of that child being able to move to receive the services they need. What was so special about that environment, though, was that special education teacher that would have been in our current system in Monroe County as a local-based teacher through the ISD, and that was the same in the primary prior district, was that teacher had the ability to come to my classroom and work alongside of me and alongside of that child, okay? And because that's what he needed. What I can say is that this young man, because you always wonder, okay, what happens to him later on as they grow up? In church on a Sunday, and all of a sudden, this young man comes walking in. Now, understand, I had him when he was in fourth grade, so 10 years old. He probably walked in the door, and he was 25 at the time. Cool thing was, you could still recognize him. He did not change a lick from 10 to 25. I mean, his face there. But he was a productive member of society. He was doing everything he needed to. And the point was, he had to have that opportunity, though, for the whole setting. And so when we look at it, this continuum of services isn't an idea around something that's brand new. It's just moving these resources in earlier, because in our system right now, and when I say our system, it's also in the system across Monroe County, when we look at special education, we begin providing more the services later on. And so we start to do systems of support and our interventions. And so what's happening is, and we've had to use the term, we cannot remediate take and try and pull ourselves out of where we're at academically through interventions. You've got to start earlier to not have ourselves there. So it's what we talk about when we say shrinking that red. This is what you do, you get in earlier. The psychologist a long time ago told me this: if you have a particular skill set, and we could use, for example, phonics as that example in one particular area. In the kindergarten world, you can spend 10 minutes a day on that skill. If you had to take that same child and put them in fifth grade, you're talking 25 minutes a day for that child to get the exact same output. And so that younger student right there. So what we're sharing right here is it's not something that's earth-shatteringly different. It's just a lower L. Terry, you want to add anything to this, or David, from the conversation we had over this work that I may have missed here?
I think one of the things that sticks out to me is, so when you're a building principal, you create with your team the class list. And so when you're creating those class lists each school year, you really think about your special education students and which classroom you're going to put them in. And we always try to create groupings that make the most sense, so that we can maximize the usage of social workers, OT services, all of those other services that students might need, so that those special education experts are pulled in so many different directions and they can provide as much in-depth support as is needed. And this gives a nice structure to being able to do that, so thinking about how you can strategically group students who do have IEPs together, and then think about how you can maximize the resources that you have available to you to help support them in the best ways possible. So just as I was listening to Andy talk, I was thinking about that part, and then also, you know, thinking about myself as a classroom teacher, like I was that teacher who had a lot of special education students in my classroom and worked really closely with that team, and that teacher did a lot of co-teaching with me. So I feel like this formalizes a lot of the things that we have done in years past. So it's not a new idea, but I do believe that it will help us, especially as, you know, special education supports are not as plentiful as they once were, so being able to maximize those staff people and make sure we're doing the best that we can for our kids.
So what this begins to look like is, in the world of special education, our attempt and our goal would be to, we'd have to hire special education teachers, okay, and it's five. The offset is about a 75-72% offset. So the ISD reimburses us for special education costs. So approximately 75% of our special education costs is reimbursed through the ISD, meaning the rest is on us. The large approach is that we're trying to convert where we're spending big money up high and trying to push it down, and so that we're spending the money earlier, which and over time becomes less having to be spent earlier. Because right now we're spending the resources across the whole continuum, and when I say continuum, that's all grade levels. And so, you know, we're doing everything we can with interventions with our students, professional development, everything we can there, but we're trying to now just say, okay, let's go down here to that lower L. And we're actually seeing it, and you saw the presentation from our in our kindergarten and first grade in our last workshop a couple weeks ago, with what we're seeing even at that kindergarten and first grade by bringing our lower class size numbers down, our PD we've been doing, and everything like that. We're actually seeing proficiencies, you know, increase there on, and again, we go back to that's why the, you know, I would like the iReady because it's a, you know, that kindergarten or that first grader sitting down at the computer and performing. It's not somebody sitting there saying, okay, we'll push this button or here's what you do. They've got to read and they've got to answer it themselves. So this is our way of trying to say, okay, this is how we're going to move our money so that in a few years that we've got it all focused down here rather than across and stretching all of our resources. Because now in time, as it goes on, resources are also people. And so we're still going to be going through a lot of retirements over years. And, you know, we're not seeing the schools still aren't like producing like they did back in the 80s and 90s teachers. So this is how we're looking at like moving that pendulum right there. So questions?
I don't really have a question, but I mean, are we going to run into any problems with this? Will integrate our special ed students, or
I mean, the way I and maybe I'm seeing it completely wrong.
More
if I look, if I look at these four tiers, so to speak, I would expect that the ones in the traditional classroom would probably, on an average, probably score higher than those in the fourth category. Correct? Is that a reasonable assumption? If we didn't know.
No. So what you really have is you think about it this way. You really want to look at it from the first three columns. So imagine this right here. You two are in the first class. We're all kindergartners. And so we have three classrooms in our kindergarten. And guess what? We're all on benchmark. You're in the first grade, first column. You two are in the next column. We're in the next column, so forth. Okay, we're all in the same. We're split out equitably amongst all the classrooms.
So the IEP students are integrated equally.
So that's what we've been talking about, is that when we look at the numbers of students with IEPs or students that don't have an IEP, but they maybe have tendencies that show that maybe down the road they would. And we're not talking like huge numbers. It's what we already do, where you might have, for example, that third grade classroom, as an example, you have three sections in a building, you might have one classroom where our students that hold an IEP, that's where they're at because it's a co-taught class and we're pushing a special, not co-taught, special education services are going into that classroom. It's rather than stretching it into every, because you can't stretch a special education teacher in each classroom
I mean,
in third grade.
Andy, I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm not opposed to it, I just.
No. And so.
Am I understanding it correctly though? We'll put, I don't know how to politically say this correctly, but I mean, we're grouping
everybody.
Individuals of similar talents together. Is that a correct statement? Or so that we can use the ones that need the special ed, they'll be in one group and they have special,
but
more teaching.
They wouldn't just be in that classroom by themselves. They would be with general education students as well.
And
we've been. This will probably help you, Larry. It literally explains the levels that are available and how students progress or
where are you looking?
Progress.
I don't see that. I see it. Gotcha.
So it'll show you the number of students and then how the restrictive environment goes.
Right.
So there will be students all the way to the top of this pyramid.
Potentially, yeah.
That's true, I'm just pointing it out.
So what's the difference in a traditional classroom as opposed to the co-taught classroom?
So the, in a co-taught classroom, you're gonna have, well, and again, we wanna really look at that third column, not that fourth.
Okay.
Okay, look at that third column. Your co-taught classroom is a general education teacher and a special education teacher.
Correct.
Okay, in that classroom all day. You go to the classroom to the left, that's a classroom, that's a general education classroom with students that could have an IEP in it, and that's a push-in. So Terry's a general education teacher. She has three students in that classroom that have an IEP, uh-huh. and because of the skills that the things that those that group of students needs, I'm pushing in for, it could be just language arts, and I'm pushing in sure. for that hour, okay? What we're looking at in that co-taught classroom, that third column, is this group of students. Again, we're not talking many students. And when we really look at kindergarten, that may, you know, you may be looking at here three, four students that may have a greater need. And that greater need could be, it could be both reading and math. It could be from an emotional side, you know, from the behavioral. And so,
where would we
right, speech and language.
Where would we put the student that causes this disturbance on a continual basis?
Did you watch the video?
I don't
think
so.
It's in the video. They said Arborwood and Custer.
So that
you don't
so,
see a problem with that, or
so we're taking this. Just so you know, we've taken our system we've already had in place.
And
that's
don't
for
convince,
years.
You don't have to convince me.
No, I'm saying.
I think it's good.
No,
I mean,
right. So that's where we talk about like that that fourth column right there is what would have been considered that local based classroom, and. We don't, so that's all, so we look at Arborwood and we look at Custer and go, okay, if we see a student coming out of, for example, the ECSE classroom, that's the preschool classroom that we have, and their needs could be higher, so they're gonna, that's, then we talk with parents going, all right, for the full continuous services that your child may need, it's at Arborwood or Custer, okay? Or if we look at if we have a conversation with a parent going, all right, the continuous services your child needs is only in the first three levels, but that's in all the other buildings. And that's what's already happening. We don't have local base in each of our elementaries. And
I thought we did. So in elementary school, everything's integrated. There is no, LB?
Some of our schools have LBSE.
Okay.
Others do not.
So some do.
Right.
Okay.
Really
so some
Custer and Arborwood have local-based classrooms at the elementary level.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's why those are the schools that are going to be used.
Well, I think they have the space
in the
there.
Space.
When you think about classrooms, the number of classrooms available, they also have a lot of staff that are already there that work together as a team because those classrooms are already in those buildings, so to us it made sense to use those two.
Yeah.
Does anybody see a problem with Arborwood and Custer clumped together?
No.
Or is it just me?
No, I'm with you. I haven't even started with my questions.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
I've got a few as well.
Someone else want to go first?
Well,
go ahead.
Go ahead, Tom.
Have you, I guess, my first question is, have you I guess, polled or talked to the general ed teachers that would be involved in this? Because, as you know, I live with a kindergarten teacher.
Yep.
And I certainly get a lot of opinions from her, as well as my neighbor, Carol. And they're very skeptical of this, very skeptical. And they both basically said they wouldn't touch this with a 10-foot pole.
Yep.
Particularly having maybe a grouping of IEP students in with a grouping of general ed and how that's going to affect the general ed students. They may lag behind general ed students who are in a class with no IEPs because the IEPs are going to basically due to disruption and the slower learning process are going to slow their progress as well.
So I guess like it's not like every classroom I
sounds like maybe three or four. But typically, at least, you know, what Donna would say, you might have one or two IEP students in your class with an aide. And even that's pretty disruptive. Now you've doubled that. And even if you have a co-taught teacher, there's still the disruption that goes on.
I think one thing, though, that you hit on at the beginning, though, is that we're not asking any teachers for this assignment that don't want to be part of it. We're seeking out the teachers that this is their jam. This is what they want. This is an ideal teaching environment for them. It does take a special person, I think, to want to do this. So it's, you know, when we're not, go ahead.
In addition to that, there's going to be two teachers in that.
Right, right.
There would be a special education teacher and a general ed teacher.
Right,
so
right.
There would be those two kind of qualified adults that would be in that classroom to help support those four-ish students.
Okay.
So hopefully, you know, our thinking is that, like you're saying, like if a student was causing a disruption or, you know, was interfering in some way with the learning of others, the special education teacher could then address the needs of that student, which is something we don't have available to teachers right now. You know, if you are a gen ed teacher and you have children in your classroom who tend to cause disruptions, we don't have that level of extra support for them. But this would be an extra trained teacher in special education.
The ISD is committed. They're hiring another behavior specialist. So what will happen is that behavior specialist will be in each building one day a week, going in there. And you have to remember too. These students that we're talking about are already in our kindergarten classrooms. Mm-hmm. They're not going. If they were part of coming out of the ECSE program, and were already determined that their needs were extremely high, they would already be heading to an ISD. More restrictive program. They're already in our buildings here.
What about that student? I'm sorry. What about that student that we just had, most recent student? I mean, I'm sorry. No, I think
your mic stays on. You just got to get close to it.
It seemed to me that that person did not belong in, I mean, he kind of shut down the class.
Oh, one of our disciplines.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, even if we have two teachers, I mean, it's going to shut down the whole class, won't it? I mean, am I wrong on that?
And
when you're flailing and screaming and stuff like that.
Yeah. So when students are in I'm not sure I'm addressing the question, but I'm not sure what student you're referring to 100%.
Oh, maybe one here. Okay.
In general.
But if you have a student who has needs that are that intense and they are in a local-based classroom like that, that is what has been determined to be their least restrictive environment.
Right.
So they would be in that classroom with that local-based teacher and the other supports that are there. And I guess, yes, there could be a lot of...
As I understood, that class was shut down for at least an hour while they tried to deal with that person.
That happens. Believe me. My wife has told me that happens.
And how do the other children in the class learn at that time? Are you saying you still get the same education as in the traditional?
Yes.
In a local-based classroom, they have, I can't remember the word for it, but it's their curriculum is individualized and personalized to them.
Right.
So that curriculum could look a little bit different than what a typical grade level peer might get because it's differentiated for that student. Oftentimes, too, I've seen where, you know, when a student's becoming dysregulated, which it sounds like what you might be describing, the other students would leave the classroom and be taken to another space, which is not ideal.
I gotta believe that you lose education when you switch the class in the middle of the room and try to.
So one of the things that this may help is that the local base was you had to qualify for local based classroom. Hmm. So one of the things that we've, in this model that we're changing though, is use the example you've been using right here, a student that is, does escalate right there. Now in this model, we have the ability, because we're using it across the whole continuum of kindergarten right here, so that child has access, because it may not, they may not need the access there all the time. Something is making this child be in that state. And so
it's our job to know the trigger points.
And so that's, so the idea though is, before we'd never be able to, we had to deal with it strictly in our kindergarten world, and then document, and if they qualify to receive greater services through local based, they would go, okay? In this one, you don't have to have the qualification, because what we're going to do is, if I'm that student and I'm escalating and we need for a moment in time for me to receive some special services right here or to learn more, that's what we're going to do. Because for some of our kids, the academics are in the way, it's a behavioral thing, or there's something else. But if at the end of the day, think about intervening, if those interventions aren't happening, then the more restrictive labels get placed on a child.
Let me ask you this. Does the parent have the discretion on where to put the child?
Which child?
Any. The child, whatever child.
Okay. Yeah. The IEP or the general ed?
Anyone.
No.
Yeah.
That's a question I have. Can the parents of the general ed students, can they say, I don't want my student in that class?
Well, that's, I'm politically away with putting that, but yeah, that's it.
I think one of the things that we talked about with this was informing parents.
Definitely.
And we, and again, even like right now, we have parents that come to us and demand their child not be in a classroom.
Right.
And so, and we make the adjustments then.
Okay, I think Darla has a few questions.
Yeah, some of this kind of confuses me a bit. The first time we heard about this program was on April 8th. I actually went back and reviewed, because I wanted to make sure that the information that I remembered from that was what it was. It lasted less than a minute, and that is being generous on the time, and it was, hey, we're doing this, rolled this out. It must have been a few minutes, because now that I think about it, the guys were here, so maybe my time's off a little bit, but talked about the program, and I said, it looks like it's a very well-developed program. How are we just hearing about this the first time? And so obviously, then I went and listened to the video, and this has already been rolled out to the staff. You said in the video that you have been working on this for the last 18 months.
Oh, no, not. We never used the term 18.
It said the last 18 months, everything that we focused on was on the lower L. I think there was two times 18 months.
So let me clarify. The last 18 months we've watched.
No, sorry. On the video, he said we have been, Andy said. Okay. I'm sorry, Andy made the video.
Okay.
Along with.
I have not seen the video.
Okay.
Context is for the last
18 months. There was a video of Andrew Shaw and Andrew Schilling that was made for the teachers. And he had sent it to us after our last work session that we did not get to address this. And in that, it's relaying this program. Did you watch it? Did you guys watch it?
I haven't watched it yet. No.
Anyway, in the program, it talks about how long they've been working on this. And in two different places, I say they, Andy and them talking now. And so I'm like, okay, so this has been already rolled out to the teachers. This has already been identified for what years it's going into place. It's already a well-developed program. I mean, this isn't something that just got put together. So obviously, I agree. I believe that it probably did spend this much time in it. So, what is asking from us?
Because you really need to understand, because you took some stuff out of context.
Okay.
The last 18 months, we've identified that we needed to make attempts at addressing lower L. Okay. This all became a conversation in October, November.
Okay.
Was where this conversation began here. But
okay.
For the last 18 months, though, we've identified that, and so that lower L we need to be addressing.
Okay. I apologize for the misconstruct of that statement. But I'm still kind of confused. Like, it sounds like it's a done deal. So where does the board play in making decisions on curriculum, making decisions on what's being implemented in the schools? I thought that went through the board. So it sounds like this is getting implemented without the board's approval. Is that correct?
So to answer that question, at the end of the day, yes, you could sit here and take a motion to stop this. What you've hired us to do is increase our student achievement, decrease our special education numbers, and to increase graduation rates. And what we're looking at is what's happened. When we talk about our students, all students that are part of Monroe Public Schools are, let me rephrase this, all students are general education students first at Monroe Public Schools until they need more services. And so we had to start looking at how we've been designed and what we were doing and some of the struggles we've had. And it's not just Monroe Public. It's the way that we've been constructed in Monroe County. And so we started really looking at it and say, okay, how do we make it so that less students end up having an IEP? Well, for example, here when we look at that co-taught class, when we push in special speech services, we have a potential. There is no guarantee, but a potential, because the whole class is receiving these speech services, and that we have some kids that we may have, that now we're going to have that skill set that may have been right marginal, that now we don't have that. So
I understand the program. I understand you all's explanation of it. I think you've explained what your why,
yep.
What the process is. I'm just confused again. I thought the role of the board and why we were elected was to implement what we felt the school system should be doing, and saying, hey, this is what we want to do. And correct me if I'm wrong. You have been on the board longer than me. I just feel like this is kind of backwards. And maybe you all can tell me better. I mean,
but that's where
don't we vote on curriculum before it's implemented?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So this is a major system change within Monroe Schools, and is already being implemented by, if I did not misunderstand your video, correct? And so kind of, what are we doing? Like, what is, like, are we just?
So I think the question, I understand your question is, at what point should we engage the board into the work that we're doing to better our school? Is it early on?
Well, there were a lot of programs that were implemented over the last year. I mean, we have implemented a whole bunch of stuff. We're still looking at the data on how the curriculums that we push through are being effective. We switched to a discipline-based education system, and we're looking at how does that discipline component of it with the new, what's her name, Dr. McElvaney's program? Did I say her name?
Yeah.
McBoy's program, we don't even know how effective that is. And so now we're putting something else into the mix.
But hold on.
And so I'm just trying to...
No, it all comes together, but I need you to help me understand what a discipline... what was you said, discipline?
We talked about it with one of the work sessions in there, and we were talking about the reward system, we were talking about the switch, and that's what the conversation was, how the education system has switched to a more discipline-based education system rather than what it used to be, and it was talking about the big changes that happened. I mean, it was a huge conversation in there.
Right. So, yes, yeah, so we're working more on positives.
Well, because it's a reward-based system.
Sure.
Yeah, it's still part of it. Reward-based system is still a discipline system. It's operant conditioning. I mean, it's still a discipline system. It's just a reward-based discipline system. I mean, that's it, you know. So I just want to know what is expected of us right now. This is a done deal.
Right. In all honesty, there's nothing expected here. This is... it'd be like myself walking into one of your careers and being able to say, tell you, no, this is not what you should do. When I have no, that's not, our careers is this work.
Well, But we, this is what the board is elected to do. The board is elected to what are the policies? Larry, am I missing this? Larry and Larry?
No, but I would like to know how as board members.
I see what you're saying.
I don't just under. Like,
we're not talking about changing curriculum. We're talking about changing the way that we are able to support these students. And in my experience at other districts, I've been in two different districts where they've had this going on, co-taught classrooms. In my experience, those special ed teachers that have that rich expertise in dealing with these needs are able to reach more students, not just those with IEPs, so that you have your general education students actually gaining skills alongside, because they're getting some of that expertise as well. So, you know, we're never going to be involved with picking and choosing which student goes in what classroom.
I wouldn't suggest that. I'm just talking about this program. This is a big program. It's very detailed. It's laid out. It leads all the way up to residential school, which I don't know that we've ever done that. I'm just stating how I see it, and I'm just stating that why we vote on so much other stuff. Why would a dramatic system change not be something that the board would be like, hey, we support this? I mean, we had to vote in the doc. Oh, I'm sorry, her name, Dr. McElvoy, apologize to her for me. We had to vote in implementing that program. We had to vote in the curriculums. We had to vote in, to think of all the stuff we voted on.
We brought her to you because of the funding and the amount that it was going to cost.
And I think a lot of it is a discussion as to, is this a strategy or is this below a strategy or above a strategy? And I think that's why at some point when we get into the setting of the goals, I mean, there's a couple theories. I mean, some say that we only set policies, period. Some of them say it's important that the board also get involved in strategies. That's a discussion we really haven't had, and I think we have to have, because is this a strategy? I'm not sure. It sounds like it is, but I don't know. And we haven't really delineated who does what.
Well, we haven't done anything with the strategic plan. So therefore, the absence of that, wouldn't they be related?
What did we hire Andy for?
I'm just asking for clarification on why we would vote and the board and why this is coming before the board. If this has nothing to do with the board and this is administrative decisions, then why bring it to the board? I'm just a little confused.
Correct?
Yes.
So it's not going out of work session?
We had no plan to bring it out.
See, I don't know. Usually we bring something to work session and it goes into a
Scott,
board.
You look
for
like you got something to say.
Sure.
I don't see this as the board's job to have a discretion in terms of how do you form your classrooms. I don't know that I would, because I have a wife who teaches. I think she would find this in case challenging. But I don't think that this is the board's work. I think the board's work is to approve curriculum. This is not curriculum. This is the how you're structuring a classroom. I think it is the board's job to oversee purchases such as here's what the books are and stuff like that that deal directly with curriculum. I don't think that that's what this is. I don't think that this is a votable item. I appreciate it as an information item. Our job is to oversee the bigger part, the strategic plan. What are the goals? How do you get there? It's their job to figure out how to get there and then present that.
Agreed.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Jump in, Mary.
Plan. This is a strategy, and so who does the strategies? I think that's what we're into now.
Well, I think it's a strategy in the sense that the truth is every student needs to be educated, and so they're trying to figure out what that looks like here. And it looks different. This is not different than what other schools are doing. I mean, this has been going on since 70s.
Oh, this was going on way before that, Scott. But I mean, but there came
well, in the 70s,
the
we
law.
Had a lot more inclusive yeah, rooms where students
law,
weren't brought out. And there's a lot of positives for integration and what
right.
they're doing here.
Right.
Mary,
so
jump in here.
May I ask some just practical implementation type questions?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So we're looking at this structure for Young Fives in kindergarten. From experiences teaching Young Fives in kindergarten, many of those students, some come from our ISD-based pre-K, things
yep.
like that. So we do have that information. Some of them do come with behavioral assessments, IEP equivalents, things like
yep.
that. However, for the vast majority of our students, we don't have that information. So my question is, how are we selecting what students go where? And then my follow-up question is, how solid are those class assignments once the school year begins? Because in my mind, you're going to need
yep.
tremendous flexibility in all four
yep.
of those
yes.
tiers,
yes.
not just with local base, but
yep.
all four of the tiers in order to make this effective.
Yep.
So
can I just add one question to what she...
Yeah.
Because I like where you're going with this, but this goes back to something you said just to begin with, which really caught me off guard, which, please, McNew, don't listen to this. that 25% is paid by us and 75% by the ISD.
Yeah.
What's our limitation on utilizing that resource?
So that's
I had a question there.
Like
how
that.
Many IEPs 504s?
Yeah. So that's so what that is that the county has a X number of dollars that are allocated for special education, and then you have it gets reimbursed. So, you know, the more we do, the less that goes out. So, for example, if we add 20 special education teachers, instead of the whole county getting a 75% reimbursement rate, they're going to go down to probably a 65% reimbursement rate because we've grown, and so that's where we. When we talk as superintendents, we talk about salary, we talk about benefits, we talk about all that pay, so that way we can really maximize our dollars in the special education world. We're not one of those counties here yet where it's 100% reimbursement. There's a couple other counties near us that are. But
Wayne County?
But you'd have to
not
be
Wayne.
Talking about
yeah.
the anticipation of having a lot of students to be able to fill
No.
your continuum. If you're looking at 22 students in each classroom over here and you're talking about using Arborwood and Custer, I'm just kind of confused.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot
no.
of people.
So that when you really begin to look at that fourth column, that's not kindergarten. Local base or that that classroom right there, you're going to see a kindergartner
okay.
all the way up through fourth or fifth grade. I mean,
yeah.
you're going to
yeah.
see...
Classroom.
Yeah, just not all at the same time. They'll balance their schedules. When we get into, when we put that number, for example, in that co-taught classroom, that was just a top number. We could have put 20 on there, but it's not students with IEPs. It's a blend
yeah.
of a classroom there. But I want to be able to answer your question because that was one of the things that we talked about kindergarten registration is the idea, and please help me if I make a mistake here, but that we are assessing our students. So we have kind of a baseline set of information on where our kindergartners are coming in the door, okay? And,
but that's academics.
Yep. Well, through that same time, though, that our kindergarten teachers are with them, they're able to also see, okay, is the child independent? Is what kind of direction following all those intangibles? But the other part being, too, is, yes, these classrooms that we're talking about right here, there is a lot of flexibility that we're not going to say, okay, well, you know, this classroom is full before we even start the year. Because that's the idea around it, is that there couldn't be that potential for movement. And as you grow older, too, that child's going to move out, and others may move in. And we could even come throughout the year where that there could be some movement. Because when you start to get in there and things get tough or something happens, that need there has come about. I know Terry had a question, so I wanted to make sure I get yours answered.
So from what I heard, that there will be some permeability.
Yes.
Between those classrooms,
yes.
Even after the school year has started.
Yeah.
So that if we need to kind of reassign,
yep.
And
yep.
Meet students' needs,
yep.
That you'll have the flexibility,
yeah.
To do that.
So if severe mentally impacted child wants to get in a traditional room, he's free to do that?
No. So when you talk about, for example, a severely disabled student, you know, that student is already going to be more restrictive, like in a local-based classroom,
yeah.
And then time comes out. We're talking about the students that we see every day in our buildings, okay, is what we're seeing there. But I do have one.
So are those assessments, real quick, that you talked about, the kindergarten teacher coming in and doing and identifying where the students go, are they subjective, objective, or what? Are how do they assess the behavioral components?
So you're sitting there, and so you have a kindergartner, and you're going through watching them do their cutting skills, saying, okay, can you count for me? And so it's just a moment in time right there. You're watching for how the child, do they hang tight with mom or dad when they come in there? You're looking for little cues.
So it's subjective.
Just on that side.
Yeah.
And then, but if we notice, the other one is through our preschool programs and others, even bringing kids in for the summer learning program,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Terry had one question, then we'll come right back to you. Okay,
okay.
Please.
I was just going to help on that answer.
Yeah.
Since, again, I live with a kindergarten teacher, they pretty quickly can assess the type of skill sets we're talking about.
Yeah.
Maybe not their academic, but certainly, even if they can go to the bathroom by themselves, that's
yeah.
The kind of thing that they're evaluating the first few weeks.
Yeah.
And they'll figure that out pretty quick.
Well, we are coming up, but you have
yep.
5 minutes left before you are.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, so I've just been sitting and listening and just trying to think of maybe a way to kind of like encapsulate this work. So one of the things that we have been working on for a number of years is thinking about the continuum of services that we provide for special education students. And so currently we have resource room support in our district and then local-based support in our district, and not a lot of structures in between there. So our hope was that with this work, and Emily Bunden and Andrew Schilling, our special education directors, they've done a lot of work with this. What they tried to do is to expand that continuum of services for kids who are receiving special education to better meet them along the different types of opportunities or learning environments that we think we could provide to kids to be able to better support them. So that was, you know, where this all initiated and all began was through like trying to just expand the services that we can provide to kids. So I don't know if that kind of helps to like put it in perspective or not.
This is yes or no. Is this part of the 60 by 30 focus? Through the state, for Monroe County?
60 by 30.
60 by 30 is the college focus on getting 60% of students to a degree by the year 2030.
No.
So the school has nothing to do with that? I was just curious about it.
I wouldn't think this has.
No.
No, this. Not this. Just the well, this would be because this is how you're going to get kids.
Long term.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all about
this
yeah. Is an attempt
it's
to provide our students with the best possible education that we can.
Yep, right out of the box.
And on that, I'm going to call you.
Thank
658.
You. Perfect.
Can I get a motion to adjourn this meeting?
So moved.
Support. All right, this meeting is adjourned. We'll start our next one at 7:02. Thank you.